Chapter 37. I had weight of guilt upon me enough to sink any creature who had the least power of reflection left, and had any sense upon them of the happiness of this life, of the misery of another. Then I had at first remorse indeed, but no repentance. I had now neither remorse nor repentance. I had a crime charged on me, the punishment of which was death by our law. The proof so evident, that there was no room for me, so much as to plead not guilty. I had the name of an old offender, so that I had nothing to expect, but death in a few weeks' time, neither had I myself any thoughts of escaping, and yet a certain strange lethargy of soul possessed me. I had no trouble, no apprehensions, no sorrow about me, the first surprise was gone. I was, I may well say, I know not how. My senses, my reason, nay, my conscience, were all asleep. My course of life for 40 years had been a horrid complication of wickedness, whoredom, adultery, incest, lying, theft, and, in a word, everything but murder and treason had been my practice from the age of 18, or thereabouts, to 80. And now I was engulfed in the misery of punishment, and had an infamous death just at the door, and yet I had no sense of my condition, no thought of heaven or hell at least, that went any farther than a bare flying touch, like the stitch or pain that gives a hint and goes off. I neither had a heart to ask God's mercy, nor indeed to think of it. And in this, I think, I have given a brief description of the completest misery on earth. All my terrifying thoughts were past, the horrors of the place were become familiar, and I felt no more uneasiness at the noise and clamors of the prison than they did who made that noise. In a word, I was become a mere Newgate bird, as wicked and as outrageous as any of them. Nay, I scarce retained the habit and custom of good breeding and manners, which all along till now ran through my conversation. So thorough a degeneracy had possessed me, that I was no more the same thing that I had been, than if I had never been otherwise, than what I was now. In the middle of this hardened part of my life I had another sudden surprise, which called me back a little to that thing called sorrow, which indeed I began to be past the sense of before. They told me one night, that there was brought into the prison late the night before 3 highwaymen. Who had committed robbery somewhere on the road to Windsor, Hounslow Heath, I think it was, and were pursued to Uxbridge by the country, and were taken there after a gallant resistance, in which I know not how many of the country people were wounded, and some killed. It is not to be wondered that we prisoners were all desirous enough to see these brave, topping gentlemen, that were talked up to be such as their fellows had not been known, and especially because it was said they would in the morning be removed into the press yard, having given money to the headmaster of the prison, to be allowed the liberty of that better part of the prison. So we that were women placed ourselves in the way, that we would be sure to see them. But nothing could express the amazement and surprise I was in, when the very first man that came out I knew to be my Lancashire husband, the same who lived so well at Dunstable, and the same who I afterwards saw at Brickhill, when I was married to my last husband, as has been related. I was struck dumb at the sight, and knew neither what to say nor what to do. He did not know me, and that was all the present relief I had. I quitted my company, and retired as much as that dreadful place suffers anybody to retire, and I cried vehemently for a great while. Dreadful creature that I am, apostrophe said I, how many poor people have I made miserable? How many desperate wretches have I sent to the devil? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he had told me at Chester he was ruined by that match, and that his fortunes were made desperate on my account. For that thinking I had been a fortune, he was run into debt more than he was able to pay, and that he knew not what course to take, that he would go into the army, and carry a musket, or buy a horse and take a tour, as he called it. And though I never told him that I was a fortune, and so did not actually deceive him myself, yet I did encourage the having it thought that I was so, and by that means I was the occasion originally of his mischief. The surprise of the thing only struck deeper into my thoughts, Any gave me stronger afflictions than all that had befallen me before. I grieved day and night for him, and the more for that they told me he was the captain of the gang, and that he had committed so many robberies, that Hind, or Whitney, or the golden farmer were fools to him, that he would surely be hanged, if there were no more men left in the country he was born in, and that there would abundance of people come in against him. I was overwhelmed with grief for him. My own case gave me no disturbance compared to this, and I loaded myself with reproaches on his account. I bewailed his misfortunes, and the ruin he was now come to, at such a rate, that I relished nothing now as I did before, and the first reflections I made upon the horrid detestable life I had lived began to return upon me, and as these things returned, my abhorrence of the place I was in, and of the way of living in it, returned also. In a word, I was perfectly changed, and become another body. While I was under these influences of sorrow for him, came notice to me that the next sessions approaching there would be a bill preferred to the grand jury against me, and that I should be certainly tried for my life at the Old Bailey. My temper was touched before, the hardened, wretched boldness of spirit which I had acquired abated, and conscious in the prison, guilt began to flow in upon my mind. In short, I began to think, and to think is one real advance from hell to heaven. All that hellish, hardened state and temper of soul, which I have said so much of before, is but a deprivation of thought. He that is restored to his power of thinking, is restored to himself. As soon as I began, I say, to think, the first thing that occurred to me broke out thus. Lord, what will become of me? I shall certainly die. I shall be cast, to be sure, and there is nothing beyond that but death. I have no friends. What shall I do? I shall be certainly cast. Lord, have mercy upon me. What will become of me? This was a sad thought, you will say, to be the first, after so long a time, that it started into my soul of that kind, and yet even this was nothing but fright at what was to come. There was not a word of sincere repentance in it all. However, I was indeed dreadfully dejected, and disconsolate to the last degree, and as I had no friend in the world to communicate my distressed thoughts to, it lay so heavy upon me, that it threw me into fits and swoonings several times a day. I sent for my old governess, and she, give her her due, acted the part of a true friend. She left no stone unturned to prevent the grand jury finding the bill. She sought out one or two of the jurymen, talked with them, and endeavored to possess them with favorable dispositions, on account that nothing was taken away, and no house broken, etc. But all would not do, they were overruled by the rest. The two wenches swore home to the fact, and the jury found the bill against me for robbery and housebreaking, that is, for felony and burglary. I sunk down when they brought me news of it, and after I came to myself again, I thought I should have died with the weight of it. My governess acted a true mother to me. She pitied me, she cried with me, and for me, but she could not help me. And to add to the terror of it, 'twas the discourse all over the house, that I should die for it. I could hear them talk it among themselves very often, and see them shake their heads, and say they were sorry for it, and the like, as is usual in the place. But still nobody came to tell me their thoughts, till at last one of the keepers came to me privately, and said with a sigh, "Well, Mrs. Flanders, you will be tried on Friday. This was but a Wednesday. What do you intend to do?" I turned as white as a clout, and said, "God knows what I shall do. For my part, I know not what to do." Says he, "I won't flatter you. I would have you prepare for death, for I doubt you will be cast. And as they say you are an old offender, I doubt you will find but little mercy." "They say," added he, "your case is very plain, and that the witnesses swear so home against you, there will be no standing it." This was a stab into the very vitals of one under such a burthen as I was oppressed with before, and I could not speak to him a word, good or bad, for a great while. But at last I burst out into tears, and said to him, Lord, Mister, what must I do? Apostrophe do. Says he, send for the ordinary, send for a minister and talk with him. For, indeed, Mrs. Flanders, unless you have very good friends, you are no woman for this world. Apostrophe, this was plain dealing indeed, but it was very harsh to me, at least I thought it so. He left me in the greatest confusion imaginable, and all that night I lay awake. And now I began to say my prayers, which I had scarce done before since my last husband's death, or from a little while after. And truly I may well call it saying my prayers, for I was in such a confusion, and had such horror upon my mind, that though I cried, and repeated several times the ordinary expression of Lord, have mercy upon me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I never brought myself to any sense of my being a miserable sinner, as indeed I was, and of confessing my sins to God, and begging pardon for the sake of Jesus Christ. I was overwhelmed with the sense of my condition, being tried for my life, and being sure to be condemned, and then I was as sure to be executed, and on this account I cried out all night, Lord, what will become of me? Lord, what shall I do? Lord, I shall be hanged. Lord, have mercy upon me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and the like. My poor afflicted governess was now as much concerned as I, and a great deal more truly penitent, though she had no prospect of being brought to trial and sentence. Not but that she deserved it as much as I, and so she said herself, but she had not done anything herself for many years, other than receiving what I and others stole, and encouraging us to steal it. But she cried, and took on like a distracted body, wringing her hands, and crying out, that she was undone, that she believed there was a curse from heaven upon her, that she should be damned, that she had been the destruction of all her friends, that she had brought such a one, and such a one, and such a one to the gallows. And there she reckoned up 10 or 11 people, some of which I have given account of, that came to untimely ends. And that now she was the occasion of my ruin, for she had persuaded me to go on, when I would have left off. I interrupted her there. No, mother, no, apostrophe, said I, don't speak of that, for you would have had me left off when I got the mercer's money again, and when I came home from Erich, and I would not hearken to you, therefore you have not been to blame. It is I only have ruined myself, I have brought myself to this misery. And thus we spent many hours together. Well, there was no remedy. The prosecution went on, and on the Thursday I was carried down to the Sessions House, where I was arraigned, as they called it, and the next day I was appointed to be tried. At the arraignment I pleaded not guilty, apostrophe, and well I might, for I was indicted for felony and burglary. That is, for feloniously stealing 2 pieces of brocaded silk, value number 46, the goods of Anthony Johnson, and for breaking open his doors, whereas I knew very well they could not pretend to prove I had broken up the doors, or so much as lifted up a latch. On the Friday I was brought to my trial. I had exhausted my spirits with crying for 2 or 3 days before, so that I slept better the Thursday night than I expected, and had more courage for my trial than indeed I thought possible for me to have. When the trial began, the indictment was read. I would have spoke, but they told me the witnesses must be heard first, and then I should have time to be heard. The witnesses were the 2 wenches, a couple of hard-mouthed jades indeed, for though the thing was truth in the main, yet they aggravated it to the utmost extremity, and swore I had the goods wholly in my possession, that I had hid them among my clothes, that I was going off with them, that I had 1 foot over the threshold when they discovered themselves, and then I put the other over, so that I was quite out of the house in the street with the goods, before they took hold of me, and then they seized me, and brought me back again, and they took the goods upon me. The fact in general was all true, but I believe, and insisted upon it, that they stopped me, before I had set my foot clear of the threshold of the house. But that did not argue much, For certain it was that I had taken the goods, and I was bringing them away, if I had not been taken. But I pleaded, that I had stole nothing, they had lost nothing, that the door was open, and I went in, seeing the goods lie there, and with design to buy. If, seeing nobody in the house, I had taken any of them up in my hand, it could not be concluded that I intended to steal them, for that I never carried them farther than the door, to look on them with a better light. The court would not allow that by any means, and made a kind of a jest of my intending to buy the goods, that being no shop for the selling of anything, and as to carrying them to the door to look at them, the maids made their impudent mocks upon that, and spent their wit upon it very much. Told the court I had looked at them sufficiently, and approved them very well, for I had packed them up under my clothes, and was a-going with them. In short, I was found guilty of felony, but acquitted of the burglary, which was but small comfort to me, the first bringing me to a sentence of death, and the last would have done no more. The next day I was carried down to receive the dreadful sentence, and when they came to ask me what I had to say why sentence should not pass, I stood mute a while, but somebody that stood behind me prompted me aloud to speak to the judges, for that they could represent things favorably for me. This encouraged me to speak, and I told them I had nothing to say to stop the sentence, but that I had much to say to bespeak the mercy of the court, that I hoped they would allow something in such a case for the circumstances of it, that I had broken no doors, had carried nothing off, that nobody had lost anything, that the person whose goods they were, was pleased to say he desired mercy might be shown, which indeed he very honestly did, that, at the worst, it was the first offense, and that I had never been before any court of justice before. And, in a word, I spoke with more courage than I thought I could have done, and in such a moving tone, and though with tears, yet not so many tears, as to obstruct my speech, that I could see it moved others to tears that heard me. The judges sat grave and mute, gave me an easy hearing, and time to say all that I would, but, saying neither yes nor no to it, pronounced the sentence of death upon me, a sentence that was to me like death itself, which, after it was read, confounded me. I had no more spirit left in me, I had no tongue to speak, or eyes to look up either to God or man. My poor governess was utterly disconsolate, and she that was my comforter before, wanted comfort now herself, and sometimes mourning, sometimes raging, was as much out of herself, as to all outward appearance, as any mad woman in Bedlam. Nor was she only disconsolate as to me, but she was struck with horror at the sense of her own wicked life, and began to look back upon it with a taste quite different from mine, for she was penitent to the highest degree for her sins, as well as sorrowful for the misfortune. She sent for a minister to, a serious, pious, good man, and applied herself with such earnestness, by his assistance, to the work of a sincere repentance, that I believe, and so did the minister too, that she was a true penitent, and, which is still more, she was not only so for the occasion, and at that juncture, but she continued so, as I was informed, to the day of her death. It is rather to be thought of than expressed, what was now my condition. I had nothing before me but present death, and as I had no friends to assist me, or to stir for me, I expected. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.